This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the official EFL podcast with me, Mark Clement. In the week one in Sky Bet League One, Charlton Athletic's first goal in their win against Barnsley was scored by Tyrese Anthony Tupac Shakur Campbell. It's a legendary Sky Bet Championship midfielder rather than a deceased US rapper who's first up for us on this episode.
Feel good, feel fine to play week in, week out, and I just want to carry on that as long as I possibly can.
We'll also reflect on this year's EFL Week of Action.
It's the nation's sport. You know, we have fantastic attendances, but fundamentally, it's not just about the green rectangle.
And he's back from Australia with a bang.
I come back to my wife and said, look, I think we're going to have to go back home. I think it's for the best. And I made the selfish decision to take us all over there. But listen, in this case, football comes second.
It's the official EFL podcast. From 21st to 4th, off the back of taking 25 points from a possible 33 is Middlesbrough's recent record under new head coach Michael Carrick. The best start of any Borough manager since Brian Robson back in 1994. And the sixth in 4.5 years, Captain Johnny Howson has played under. Do you get nervous when a new manager comes in, Johnny, about what it means, you know, human nature, what it would mean for you as an individual?
No, I wouldn't say nervous. Let's be honest, whenever a new manager comes in, to a certain extent, anything can happen. A new manager coming in is going to have his own ideas, whether that's from where he wants to play, personnel, whatever it may be. And certainly at my age now, I've seen a few manager changes, even at previous clubs. It's part and parcel of football, and it's happening, let's be honest, more often than I personally believe it should do in the game these days. But as a player, you can't do anything about that. You have to get on with it. And I've always been a believer in, you give it your best shot as a player. You do what's asked of you to the best of your ability. And that's irrespective of who's in charge. And this probably comes with age. But if, whether it's a manager or coach, is not having you as a player for whatever reason, nothing's personal. You know, the game's full of opinions. You know, we all can sit here and watch a game of football and I can like certain players, think they should play a certain way, and the guy outside of you might think something different, and that's probably one of many reasons why we all love this sport, because it is full of opinions, and as you go back to it, it's nothing personal. So back to the original point, no, I wouldn't say I get nervous, but I think when someone walks in through the door under the caliber of the manager, it's exciting for everyone, whether that's a fan, a player, a coach, a staff member at the club, because of what he's done in the game, and everyone respects that.
Well, I was going to ask you about that, and particularly when he plays in your kind of position, when somebody comes in with that kind of professional pedigree, you know, 5 Premier League titles, FA Cup, 2 League Cups, Champions League, Europa League, I could go on and on, yeah, and on. Does that bring a little bit of extra pressure, or do you see it as an opportunity to keep adding to your own skill mix?
No, it's an opportunity. And whether my time lasts with him months, years, who knows? No one can ever predict the future. But even now, I look at every day is a day that you can learn something. And as I go back to, and as yourself had said, regards to what he has won in his career, if he tells you something, let's be honest, it's going to be right more than at times than not, because of he's been there and done it, he's been very successful. So you initially take that on board, and it's great just being out on the training pitch. Certainly, as you said, of playing the position that I'm playing at now, who better to learn? There's probably an handful of people in this country that and managing that have got his credentials, if you like, from a playing career. So I think it's a great opportunity for you, whether you're at my stage of your career or the other side of the career of midfield partner at the minute in Hayden, you know, just starting out. It's great for both of us, and it's only going to benefit as both and learn. And I can speak for both of us on this aspect that we both want to learn and get better if we can.
Yeah, Hayden Hackney, for anybody that hadn't worked it out, has come into the team over the last 12, 14 games or so. I just had as you were sort of talking about his credentials, suddenly it hit me, Johnny, that you will have played up against Michael, and there must be that moment when he's appointed where you think, oh, blimey, I hope I didn't duff him up at any stage or have a little head-to-head on the pitch or anything he's going to hold against me. Were you clean on that front?
Yeah, he'd actually done me one time, if I'm honest.
Did but like,
from, he? From a fair point, yeah, I've not spoken to him about it. Once he's been here a bit longer, I will mention it. But no, it was all fair. And let's be honest, when I played against him, I was probably just chasing him around and trying to get the ball off him. So I don't think I really got a chance to leave one on him because I couldn't get close to him.
Johnny, you're the Borough captain. I'm not going to allow you to be that people. Listen, I mean, moments like this, of this form, are rare in football. You will know from your time with Leeds, from Norwich, to go on this kind of run. It, from a supporter's point of view, I am one of those, it's pretty drastic turnaround in form. So what are the elements that have allowed this to happen?
I think confidence is a big thing. You know, when it came in, first few games, we got off to a good start, and I believe in this league that can take you a real long way. Because we have got good players, we had good players before, and for whatever reason, it just won't click in. But as you say, certainly since the manager's is come in, with fresh ideas and give that confidence to all the lads, it's like a snowball effect, and it's just took off. And when you've got that momentum, it is hard to stop when you have got good staff, good manager and good players to go with that. So long may it continue. We've done nothing yet. Yeah, it's great that we've turned things around and been on a terrific run. But flip side of that, if you stop doing the things that have got you to this position, it can soon go the other way as well. And the manager's demands and commitment to get better, hopefully, and I don't think it will do, hopefully it's not a flash in the pan or honeymoon period, if you like. Hopefully this is going to be a long-term thing.
You know what, I interviewed him this week for BBC One's Football Focus, and it struck me there's a huge load of substance to him, but he's also very straightforward. There's a wonderful simplicity to him. Have you found that in your dealings with him?
Yeah, very much so. And sometimes when he maybe explains that, it does come across that way. Sometimes it seems very simple, but you know what, as a player, I think if you do the simple things well, it's surprising how far that can go. You know, if you cut out them silly mistakes and things that you probably just switch off from at times. And I think he's quite big on that, of staying switched on, staying focused and do the simple things well. And that probably rubs off onto us as well, of like you've picked up on.
The other aspect of this is, and he's kind of played this down a wee bit, but there's been a kind of tweaking of individual player roles, and some of them feel a little bit plucky, you know. got the most prolific striker in the Championship, but wasn't afraid to pull him a bit deeper, to push a central midfielder in Matt Crooks further forward. Obviously, Tommy Smith's come in and has got quite a fluid role as well. Is there a little moment as well where the boys come in the changing rooms and go, oh, he wants to try me up front? And they're a little bit daunted at first, and then they kind of grow into it over the space of a couple of training sessions.
Yeah, of course, and I think it's... Well, lads aren't daft as well, as you mentioned there. Obviously, Crooksy going up front. And at first, it is going to be a bit of banter, if you like, flying round. But Crooksy, he was coming off the bench. He scored a couple of late goals for us. I think his first game that he started up front, he scored as well. And then you just buy into it. But it all goes back to that of... For what he's done in the game, he obviously sees something in it, and there's reason behind it. It's not just a case of Crooksy, where do you fancy playing, or Tubes, do you want to play here? There?
Wasn't suggesting that, Johnny, no, for one second, no, but, as you well know.
There's a thought process gone into it, and I think when you've got everyone buying into that, it's surprising what that can do and knock-on effect it might have on someone else. And it goes with confidence as well, as you go back to, of when things are going well, you make decisions and they come off for you, and everything seems to go nicely for you.
I tell you what, it's such a... I mean, if you were a neutral in this situation, I think I'm right in saying last weekend, third place changed hands four times over the space of the time the games were on, from Blackburn starting with it to, I think, Luton went in there, then you went in there, and then obviously it finished off with, who's there now, Watford coming through. I mean, it is remarkable the amount of teams that are still in contention, John. Do you look at the table? Do you analyse? Do you look at others? Or are you very much, we can only control what we do ourselves?
From a personal point of view, no. Let's be honest, you aren't aware of it. and you do see it from time to time. It probably comes with age of, as you've just said there, last weekend, third place has changed numerous times, and we're in January, so there's a long way to go. Anything can happen, and the other side of that is you've probably got 10, maybe 12 teams, maybe even more this season, because maybe barring the top two, it is ever so tight. That probably still thinks, if we can put a run together like ourselves have done, like West Brom has done as well, you can find yourself right in amongst it. So, yeah, it's been great up until now. Things are going well, but we're still a long way to go. And the old cliche, one game at a time.
I'll just mention this weekend's games, if I might. Johnny, Friday night, Sheffield United second, 5 points behind Burnley. 9 wins in the last 11 at home to Hull. Massive game. Burnley against West Brom. 7 consecutive wins for the leaders. West Brom 9 wins in the last 11. Early kickoff Saturday. One of Johnny's former teams, Norwich, who won their first league game under David Wagner. They go to Coventry. Big game at the bottom of the table. 23rd Blackpool against 22nd Huddersfield Town. 5th place Blackburn are at Bristol City. Cardiff, who will continue life without Mark Hudson, they've changed the manager for the second time this season. They're at home to Millwall. Watford in 3rd are at home to Rotherham. And then on Sunday, Johnny, there's a rather big game. Is there not? Are you obviously travelling to Sunderland for the Weir Tees Derby? Are you even talking about it, the boys, or is it very much, it's another game, if you can?
Yeah, I'd say it's another game. Let's be honest, we are aware of the rivalry. Two teams are going well. But it's just another game. You know, we've had training this morning. And like... we have done since he's come in, we'll have a game plan. He'll prepare us a certain way. We'll work on things that we can think are going to benefit us and cause them problems, bits to stop them playing and their strengths. So you treat it like any other game and prepare for it. So that's no different. And I'll be honest, no, there's not been much talk for it. I think we'll be naturally aware of two well-supported sides, two teams going well, and it'll be a great atmosphere and a great game to play in. But in games like this, you've got to just concentrate on your own game and don't get too carried away and too caught up in the emotions that might be going on outside the pitch.
Now, listen, you've mentioned age a few times during the course of this chat. Are you starting to feel like one of the elder statesmen of the game, mate?
Quite a few lads. Don't let me forget, if I'm honest. So.
Really? Do they use it as a stick to have a little poke at you, do they?
Yeah, of course they do. And it don't bother me one bit because of... I look at a few reasons. One, I can't do anything about it. And the other thing is... feel good, feel fine to play week in, week out, and I just want to carry on that as long as I possibly can. And but the main thing is I'm enjoying it and still feel as fit as ever.
Is this one of the richest periods of your career? I don't mean financially, I mean in terms of the feeling you get inside coming off a football pitch with great momentum behind the side that you're playing in.
Yeah. Let's be honest, I think when you're winning games of football, it's always enjoyable. That's never changed, and I don't think it ever will. You know, there's not many better feelings when you come off that pitch and you've got another 3 points, a good performance. It's football, isn't it? I think I've been quite good at this throughout my career of not getting too carried away when you are going on this form, because you do realise that can change very quickly. But then flip side, even though this can be difficult when you're going through a bad spell, keep trying to do the right things, because like we've seen this season, it can change around ever so quickly. And the main thing is you want to enjoy it. I think whatever you do in life, you want to enjoy it, and you work on the things that, how can I do that football-wise, winning games of football, and goes a long way to enjoying your football. So do whatever it takes and give yourself the best opportunity to give yourself and your team the best chance of doing that on a weekend.
Loved the chat. I'm going to ask you a question I asked of the gaffer this week. Do you think the top two are catchable?
In football, until it's mathematically done, of course it is. Not naive to think there's a long way to go, but anything can happen in football. But you've got two terrific sides at the top two, in Sheffield United and Burnley. And it will be extremely difficult, but I think you mentioned it before. Concentrate on yourself and the rest will take care of itself. We can't affect that now, barring when we play them. But if we take care of ourselves, anything can happen.
Up the Borough, Johnny Howson. Great to talk to you.
Yeah, you too.
The official EFL podcast with Mark Clint.
The EFL's annual week of action is once again upon us. It runs this year from the 16th to the 20th of January. It sees all 72 clubs from the EFL's three divisions come together to demonstrate the impact football can have in positively changing people's lives. Players and managers have this week been joining participants across England and Wales in all sorts of activity and community projects, including, just looking through the list here, Burnley's Vincent Kompany visiting a local high school school to meet students engaged on a mental health support program. Blackburn Rovers' Ben Brereton-Diaz joining participants in the club's walking football sessions, those that have specifically actually been designed for local people with Parkinson's disease, and Ipswich Town's support for local refugees, plus many, many more. The chair of the EFL Trust to run the week of action is Liam Scully. I think we've got to start, Liam, with this new impact report that has come out this week. I mean, some truly remarkable figures. I'm talking financially being attributed to Week of Action projects. Astonishing.
Yeah, no, we're incredibly proud of our network of club community organisations, CCOs, that use the power and the badge of the club and fundamentally work within their local communities to solve local challenges, local problems, but delivered by local people and local practitioners. And fundamentally, yeah, the headline is that we've created nearly £1 billion worth of social value and social impact. You know, these are football clubs, the charity arms, but you know, often, you know, volunteers, practitioners that work within their locality that have done this incredible level of work day in, day out. But yeah, the sum of those parts are the reports that you've seen, over £865 million worth of social value delivered by our clubs.
It's a huge number, and I don't want to overly politicise this, but I mean, you do get some thanks for this, do you? Because this is saving the public purse fortunes.
Yeah, you know, we are funded from a range of sources. I think first and foremost, one of the things we have to note is, you know, the economies that's achieved through, you know, using the football club, you know, as the hub and as the starting point. But yet there are a range of funders and funding partners, you know, that do help towards that. But I think the most important part of this is how economic and how economically efficient the CCOs are in their delivery. Fundamentally, the pound that is invested into our CCOs goes direct, you know, the large majority of that goes direct to the front line. We're able to act dynamically and adapt to situations. So as we all know, the challenges that our country is facing at the moment, you know, we've seen so many clubs and stadiums open up as warm hubs, you know, offering, you know, food options, education options. So I think the one thing that we're most proud of, whilst the number, you know, £865 million worth of social value is an incredible number, I think the most important thing for me as chair of the EFL Trust is seeing how our CCOs have adapted so quickly to the current needs of our nation and to the current needs of our local population and our people, like I say, local solutions for local problems, and got to the root of those problems so quickly and made such a difference and so much impact. And that's why I think you see such incredible numbers.
Forgive my ignorance if this is obvious. CCOs?
Sorry, club community organisations that
right,
sit within
sorry.
The clubs.
Probably should have known that one, but I was just making absolutely sure if I didn't know that perhaps we've got listeners who weren't quite clear. I mean, all of this kind of rather begs the question, Liam, that some may be saying, why do EFL football clubs work so hard for their local communities? I guess what's in it for the clubs that are already stretched themselves trying to carry out their core activities of staging football matches and winning them?
Yeah, I think, you know, our game often, you know, is recognised, you know, we hear and read about the, you know, the Premier League as one of our greatest exports. But I think at EFL level, you know, clubs are wholly embedded within their communities. It isn't just about Saturday between 3 and 5pm. You know, we are a full-time organisation and actually we're temporary custodians of our football clubs. You know, they've been here for, Lincoln City's been here for over 136 years and it'll, you know, be here for 136 years plus and more. And our job and our responsibility is just to add value to our communities every single day. And we all do that in very different ways. Of course, we respect that, you know, the match day, I suppose, is the key milestone in every week and is something that we are there to celebrate. But our reach, our impact and our ability to influence stretches far beyond that. And I think what you do see is clubs acting responsibly with that and wanting to make the most difference they can within their communities. I think it's a vocational habit. I think that's the most, you know, the best way I can put this, and, you know, completely committed to making a difference with our communities. I speak to many owners and chief execs aspects, and they're entirely the same.
I'll just to absolutely clarify, you are the chief executive of Lincoln City as well. Do you almost get as much satisfaction sometimes from a real success story that's come out of your community programs as you would almost performance on the field? You get the same sort of buzz.
Completely. I think you, as a chief executive of a football club in the EFL, you have to be so aware of your responsibilities. First of all, you are given the responsibility of running the fans' football club, and that's really important. But your actions, your behaviours, and everything that you do has to be in around what you can do for your communities. And you know, this you know, might not always be the most popular response, certainly when you know you're on our run of form at the moment. But yeah, you're absolutely right, Clem. The thing that makes you know put your head on the pillow at night and feel like you've done a good job is hopefully bringing winning, attractive football to your community, but equally knowing that you can make a difference and things that you may have done with them that day, that week, that month, that have genuinely changed lives or had a positive impact on people's lives. I think that's actually, you know, it's certainly equally important, if not more important, than the obvious job that you're here to do as well.
And the week of action, just how symbolic and important has that become as part of the annual football calendar?
Yes, so I think what the week of action does is it shines a light and just elevates and shows everybody within the, you know, outside, inside and outside of football exactly what goes on. And any given day, week, hour, you know, all year round within football clubs. But what the week of action does is it just elevates and highlights that and just, you know, really makes a point. Let's just be really clear, Clem. This goes on all the time. The work that you're seeing isn't a one-week roadshow. It's not something that's been put on specially. What has been done is that, you know, working, you know, with various different organisations, we've just elevated and shone a light on it and really focused on it for this week. And the team do a fantastic job of this. But what is really important to know is that this will go on long beyond the week of action and will continue, you know, all year round in various different communities, you know, up and down the country and right across the breadth of it.
Well, I'll tell you what, let's try and bring this to life because so many great stories and initiatives from club community organisations across England and Wales. And we can hear from Lee Stewart, who's benefited directly from one of the initiatives. It's Sunderland's Fit Fans programme. Lee, first of all, how did you find out about the initiative you got involved with?
It was almost by accident and the timing was incredible. I'd been through a bit of a bad spell. My parents had both been diagnosed with cancer and then both passed away within a couple of weeks of each other. So I'd had problems with depression before and that really sent me spiraling. And I was just starting to come out of it a bit. I'd gone through a few bad years, to be honest. I needed something to really get me out of the house. I was eating badly. I wasn't doing any exercise. I wasn't even going out the house and socializing. And then I was just flicking through social media and I was just discussing a couple of days earlier with my partner saying I really need to go out and do something. And I literally saw an advert for EFL Trust Fit Fans. And my one was called Fit Black Cats at Sunderland. And at the timing, it was impeccable. I thought this sounds great. And I had the chance to go and see what it was about and found out you could go and train inside the stadium and have a good look around, train where the players train sometimes. Have a look in the dressing rooms, train within sight of the pitch and the timing, and it almost seemed like it was just meant to be. It was incredible.
I mean, just to be absolutely clear, you were what, a regular at the Stadium of Light beforehand? Certainly a Sunderland fan?
That's an interesting one. Sunderland's my local team. I do watch them quite a bit, but I would say I'm a general football fan. I do like travelling around the country and visiting lots of different teams. So I watch Sunderland quite a bit. I do want them to do well. I do like them as well. I kind of support them. But I also lived down south for a while, so I've got a soft spot for Plymouth Argyle. And I don't know if you've heard of ground hopping, but I travel around. I've visited hundreds of football grounds. So I just love football in general. I do like Sunderland a lot, but I'm just a massive football fan.
I know it's difficult to be a Sunderland fan with obviously much better clubs to support in the Northeast. Just to get, just to bring up what's happening at the weekend with a rather big game. I mean, I don't want to overly bore this episode, having just spoken to Johnny Howson before you two. This was a really tough time. So this has been a seminal moment in your life and turning your life around. Just tell us about the benefits that you've reaped as a result of being involved in the Fit Fans program, please.
It has completely changed my life, because I was at a crossroads at the time when I saw the advert for AFL Fit Black Cats. I could have spiraled even worse. I have been in some pretty bad places with my mental health, but going on that course, I met like-minded people, Sunderland fans, football fans in general, people like me who'd had problems in their life and they wanted to get things back on track, people trying to drink less, people trying to eat better and become more active. But the program I was on, it was part exercise and part learning good habits and things. So the exercise and the good dieting habits and stuff, I ended up losing 6 kilograms within the 12-week course we did. I went on to lose another 6 kilograms after that as well. So it really changed my physical health. But my mental health as well probably had the biggest benefit. I kind of come out of my depression a lot. Obviously, I still have moments, but it has completely changed my life. I'm out there a bit more now. I've made some great friends through the program. Some of them are really good friends with me now still. I'm back doing sport again. I started playing Sunday League again, even though I'm 46. I thought, I'll give that a go again. It's over 10 years since I played that. I've even started doing track and field athletics, competing locally and a bit further afield as well for the first time in over 10 years. And I've also started my own Sunday League team up to try and get people involved who maybe haven't been given a chance at other Sunday League teams. They've been told they're not good enough. Some of them have come from backgrounds. They've had bad mental health problems as well. There's even one or two lads who recovered from kind of to drug issues and stuff and are getting their lives back on track. So I just thought it would be good to try and give back a bit and you know, pass on the help I've received from AFL and Sunderland and the programme back to other people, because it has completely changed my life. I could have been somewhere really bad now or not even here at all. So it has turned my life around. The timing of seeing it was immaculate. And the things I've learned that the clubs and stuff do since as well, not just my programme, but programmes for inclusivity as well, programmes for people in communities who haven't really had access, the LGBTQ community, people who've moved to the country whose English skills haven't been great, it's really improved. And seeing kids as well who haven't fit in at schools and that, and the help they're getting, support, it really resonates. And being around a football club, they're not particularly academic in some ways, some of them, but they just love being around the club, and it's good that the clubs are paying back to the fans. Fans absolutely love the teams, they love football, and this programme, it's great to see the clubs giving back to the community, and it is making a massive difference to people.
Lee, amazing. I mean, hats off to you, much kudos, because obviously the club have given the impetus to get you involved in the first place, but you're the one that's had to put the effort in. I mean, just to sort of bring this full circle, it was the magic of the lure of the Sunderland name and badge that kind of hooked you onto it and really sort of alerted your attention.
Definitely. I could have gone to stuff through my GP and stuff, or I could do traditional losing weight things, Weight Watchers and things like that. But it was the lure of Sunderland FC and football clubs, being inside the stadium, being where the players are, even occasionally players sending us messages and, you know, coming to visit us and stuff. It's just really motivating. Warming up in the dressing room, doing exercise in the tunnels, running around in view of the football pitch, it is just really inspiring for football fans and people like myself.
Have you been in the stadium this week at all? I mean, you've not left anything untoward in the away dressing room, have you, or anything like that? You have behaved yourself this week?
I have this week. There's still a little bit of time, though, so there's still time to sneak in there. But the away dressing room's not as nice as the home dressing rooms, as it probably is.
That's enough. I've got to say, I've loved hearing your story. Thank you. So inspirational. If anybody is struggling at the moment, but you are just in danger of tipping the balance a little bit too far away from the mighty borough, it's time for you to go. Thanks for telling us your story, Lee.
Anytime, Clay. I'm glad to be here.
Liam, that must warm the cockles of your Hart. That is a man whose life has been transformed by one of these programs.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it just nicely, you know, frames that conversation we were having before Lee joined Clem. You know, this is the exact scenario that goes up and down, you know, the football network week in, week out. There are so many stories like Lee's, and it's really humbling to listen to. You know, fair play to Lee for the motivation and everything that he's done. But we are equally so proud of our football clubs and our club community organisations that have facilitated and gone on to change so many lives. And like I say, arcing back to this £865 million worth of social value. And, you know, whilst that's a fantastic headline, I think people like Lee and stories like Lee's are exactly why we're all, you know, all here and what we do it for.
Yeah, but it's not just about one life, actually, is it? When you hear Lee talking about how he's now giving back effectively, he's getting involved himself and inspiring others to get involved, or, you know, creating his Sunday league team. It becomes self-fulfilling. There's a momentum that gets established.
Yeah, and I think this is the game changer, because football does that. It brings people together from all walks of life, from all different backgrounds. You know, I see it in the LNER Stadium, you know, every weekend, seeing that social cohesion, seeing that, you know, the togetherness of people that, you know, wouldn't normally mix. And I think these are the exact type of things that we are incredibly proud of, and what football does, and why we're different. It's the nation's sport. You know, we have fantastic attendances, but fundamentally, it's not just about the green rectangle. It is about so much more. And yeah, incredibly proud to you know, be part of that.
It would be remiss of me not to talk football briefly with you as chief exec of Lincoln City. Well, listen, you're in a reasonable position, but you don't want to get sucked in at the bottom of the table.
No, that's for sure, Clem. And I think, you know, this conversation comes on the back. You know, we've published our annual accounts this year, and you'll see clubs like Lincoln City. You know, we lost £2 million in the year just gone. And I think it goes back to this, you know, the wider piece that's going on at the moment in terms of, you know, football clubs, we do our best to impact our communities. But as chief executive of Lincoln City right now, I require, you know, the support, investment, quite frankly, donations from our investors, you know, in order to fund the football club, in order to retain and keep us competitive. So, you know, that goes into the totality of £400 million losses currently being, you know, achieved by EFL clubs. And yeah, without getting too political, why we do need redistribution and reform. But, you know, the day-to-day job is trying to bring smiles on people's faces. So, yeah, I've got a lot of respect for Dino and his team at Burton and Ben Robinson. But, yeah, certainly this weekend, our objective is to take 3 points off them.
Yeah. Your game is obviously against Burton Albion this coming weekend. I do love a bit of freakazoid form, and your home form is exactly that. Unbeaten. But only 2 wins and 10 draws. How does that happen sometimes in football?
Yeah, I like the first part of your sentence, Clem. You didn't have to carry that on.
Yeah. No, but you know, as somebody that's been in and around the game now for 20 plus years, it never ceases to amaze me. You could go, okay, you know, not sharp enough in front of goal or whatever, but that's pretty freaky form to draw that amount of games, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is, and I'd love to. You know, we've done a lot of analysis, you know, analysing the results and having a look at things. I'd love to tell you that we've got the silver bullet and we can understand exactly what it is. In fairness, Clem, I do think our fans have played a huge part of that turning a few potential defeats into draws. So I think great credit needs to go to them for that. But yeah, certainly objective for the second half of the season is to keep that unbeaten run going, but turn a few ones into threes. I think that'd be quite nice.
Yeah, I've obviously done my best to offend our Sunderland fan, Lee Stewart. I don't want to offend you as well. Keep up the great work, Liam. It's absolutely fantastic to talk to you. I hope we can put another big tick against this year's week of action as a big success. We appreciate you joining us, as we do, Lee Stewart. And good luck with getting a couple of wins on the board between now and the end of the season.
Thank you, Clem. Really appreciated. And thank you to you and your media colleagues for shining a light on this great, great piece of work, because, yeah, without you supporting it, you know, we don't get the traction it deserves. So thank you to you and your colleagues as well.
Thank you, Liam. If you would like some more information on the EFL's Week of Action, or you'd like to know how you can take part in projects in your community, then why not look at your club's own website? Or you can have a look at www.efltrust.com. That's www.efltrust.com for more information on what's happening locally and nationally.
The official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Your Sky Bet League One fixtures this coming weekend. These are all 3 o'clock on Saturday. Sixth place Barnsley at home to Accrington Stanley. Wickham have dropped to eighth, go to Bristol Rovers. Derby against Bolton is fourth v fifth. Derby have won four of their last five. Ipswich, 4 points off an automatic promotion place at the moment, go to Oxford. Peterborough up to seventh. They won their first game of Darren Ferguson's fourth spell in charge. They're at home to Charlton. Plymouth, the leaders, one league defeat in 23 matches, half a season. They're at home to Cheltenham and breathing down the back of their pants in second. Sheffield Wednesday, unbeaten in the league since the 4th of October. They are at home to Fleetwood Town. Into League Two, and it has been quite a week for Charlie Austin. In case you missed it, he recently re-signed for Swindon Town, 12 years after the end of his first spell. Between signing and making his second debut, his manager left. And then, of course, he scored the first goal at the County Ground last weekend in the 5-0 thrashing of Grimsby Town on his second debut. And actually, there's a few bits to pour over there, Charlie, but the other really weird part of that game at the weekend was the 10-minute delay because the referee, Sam Perkish, got smashed with the ball. Now, he's come out of hospital. He did have a bit of concussion. He's fine. But I've often wondered why we don't see refs getting clattered a bit more. I don't mean that I want to see it.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
But they're often in the thick of it, aren't they?
Yeah, it's quite strange. It don't happen a lot, especially where they're the people in the man in the middle, so they're always involved in the action. I think one thing that's come out of it, especially from Swindon's side, on a serious one, Clem, is that the physio, Ali, she's 30 weeks pregnant also. She makes it on the pitch to help the, help him.
Wow.
Incredible. Yeah, I think she's doing her last game against Walsall. But she was saying that the referees, the people didn't allow Swindon or didn't let Swindon know if he has any allergies or any of the stuff going on. So it was kind of like it was stuck in rock and a hard place. And she's come out and said, and she's actually emailed like the PGMOL, is that what it is? The referee.
That's right.
That every club and every official should be sent to the club of a dossier as such about their health and well-being and stuff. I don't know. I just thought that was a bit strange at the time. But thankfully, listen, he come off. He went to hospital with concussion. He's gone back home to his family and hopefully he recovers soon.
Yeah. And the good supporters of the County Ground quite rightly spotted this was more of an emergency situation, and rather than give him the usual pelters, gave him a round of applause as he was stretched off. Good to see you. I'm a little bit surprised. I thought Australia looked good on paper for you. I thought sunshine and all the rest of it.
Clem, do you know what? It wasn't to be, mate. Listen, I had a lovely time over there. Is what I expected. The weather was fantastic. Lovely country. But football wasn't the number one. And it was strange that not being the pinnacle. Football, the conversations all the time. Yes, it was happening in the at the training ground and stuff and involved with the lads. But you know, when you go away to whether you go to the pub or to the restaurant or to the shop, someone's always stopping you to speak about football and that. Football was like the fourth choice. And maybe when I first went over there, I probably thought, yeah, that'd be lovely. That's a bit of me, that. But it wasn't. I needed football to be in my life. It's been a big part of my, it's been my life the whole way through to now. So I've missed it more than anything. But on a bigger scale, mate, my eldest daughter was here, who's going through her last year at school. So she didn't want to come with us. That made it tough. 9-10 hours time difference speaking. It wasn't the one. And then around about end of October, I was driving home with my little boy. He's only six. He said to me, Dad, when do I get to go back to my old school and see my old friends? And I was like, no, I didn't expect this coming. And that was it. And I just made the decision. I come back to my wife and said, look, I think we're going to have to go back home. I think it's for the best. And I made the selfish decision to take us all over there. But listen, in this case, football comes second.
Yeah. Well, nothing ventured, nothing gained. Life's about a big adventure. Yeah. I probably didn't set it up right by saying you were playing for Brisbane Roar, who are managed by Robbie Fowler. So everything looked good on paper. Kids grow up as well, don't they? You know, you know, I know a lot of people with babies think, oh, you can just do whatever you want or order them about and things. But then their little personalities come to the fore and you have a few eureka moments where you think, actually, it'd be selfish of me to just keep driving on. I've got to take the little man.
And like I said to them, I made the selfish decision in the summer going there. I probably ran away, if I'm honest. I hold my hands up, probably ran away. It didn't work out like the ending was supposed to at QPR, and it never went forward anymore. And I just thought, listen, this ain't for me. Get me out of here, kind of thing. When I should have stayed. There's no probably about it. I should have stayed in the UK and played somewhere. But I wouldn't be speaking to you now as a Swindon Town player, would I? So
now it is Swindon Town. I mean, was that an absolute shoo-in as soon as what? They approached you, you approached them. How did it all come together?
Well, Clem Morfuni's the chairman. He's Australian. So he was over there and he was in Brisbane and we just got chatting. He just said to me, if you ever go back, please let me know that you're going back. I'd like to bring you to the football club. And I was like, this was about August time. And I was like, I just signed 2 years at Brisbane. I'm not going nowhere. And then we picked that conversation when I knew I wanted to come back. After I had a conversation with Brisbane, were brilliant, Clem, and so understanding with me. And I can't thank them enough for allowing me to leave being their marquee player. But then it just happened. The conversations escalated between me and Clem. They tried to move forward with the football club and there was a few bumps in the road, which I thought might have happened, but I thought that was easier to iron out, but they wasn't. And then, I've said numerous times now, if it wasn't for the chairman, the deal wouldn't have got done and he made it happen. And so now we kickstart.
I mean, you're obviously in a very different place to when you were coming off the building sites playing for Poole Town and first signed for Swindon. Has football got more complex then, or are we just talking about glitches as a result of maybe registration being held on the other side of the world? Deals even at a lower level are more complicated than they used to be.
Well, people start getting involved, don't they? And everybody at football clubs have a different philosophy and ethos, and bringing a 33-year-old that's has a bit to say doesn't go too far, but no, I only do it because I care. And then I couldn't play until the 1st of Jan because of the international clearance and all that kind of stuff. But look, I'm here now, and I think coming back to Swindon was, put that to side 1 minute, Clem, like the most important thing was for me, mate, was coming back, living back in my house and getting my kids back into their school. Now, I didn't want to move too far. I'm not blessed with loads of clubs that are around me to pick from. But ultimately, Swindon gave me the offer and the opportunity to come back and play, and I was never going to pass that up.
Before I ask you about getting ready to make your second debut and stuff, were you a bit floored by Scott Lindsay's departure? For anybody that missed it last week, he's swapped promotion chasing Swindon for trying to stay up Crawley Town.
Clem, I didn't speak to him right the whole way through, which I totally understand. Like, it was one of them. I spoke to the chairman. I think it was one of them where he wanted me to get through the door and then the conversations would pick up. I had 3-4 conversations, and when they come through the door, fine. Like, I thought I'm going to be working together. I look forward to it, you know. 5 days I'm in the job. He's gone. Got no manager. I didn't really know what to. I was like, he didn't really didn't want to work with me that much. So he just jacked it in and went to Crawley. No, when I spoken to him, I understood where he was coming from, and it was back up around where he's from, and it was closer to his family. So listen, in that sense, I understood it. If the football side of it, probably not, because like you just said, we're at one end of the table, he's down the other. But it could be interesting come the end of the season, because we play Crawley at home last game of the season. So can you imagine?
Do you know what? You're painting a picture of the human element of being in and around football. And there's been some quite lovely but heart-rending footage of Mark Hudson this week, who's been sat, I don't know if you've seen it, been sat by Cardiff City, but he did a little mix of the jubilation to with his kids of when he got the assistant manager's job at Cardiff. V posted a little bit of telling them that he'd just been sacked as well. I mean, you guys have got to have lives. We can't treat you like machines.
I think that's now, especially now with social media and stuff, it's been social media's been part of life now for what, 10 years or all that kind of stuff, but you get to see the in-depth more stuff of what goes on, and you see the humane side of people. And I see that video yesterday, and I think as a dad, but also as someone involved in football and all that kind of stuff, it almost brings a lump to your throat, because you have the joy at the start and how excited and how proud his boys are, to then how sad it is when Mark's explaining that he's no longer the manager, but they're still there comforting him and assuring him that they love him, you know what I mean? So it's, I don't know, it brings a little bit of lump in your throat, but that happens in football, and football's a ruthless, ruthless game. And I think it just shows in that video clip that the highs and lows of being a football manager at this current time anyway.
Yeah, but you as well. I mean, in talking about Scott Lindsay being slightly closer to home, fans may go, well, why doesn't he care about my club and all the rest of it? But it makes a difference. If you've got an extra hour and a quarter, hour and a half on your journey there and back, it's a huge chunk of your life over time. So why not operate practically or make people happy as you've done with the plucky decision to tear things up in Australia and to come back? Chaz, are you a little bit shocked how quickly it's all gone? As you say, you are an old man now of 33.
Yes.
Are you a bit surprised how much it's whizzed past?
Yesterday. Like, I think back to when I think back to when I first signed at QPR in that January time, when we was going through COVID. It was like, boom, where's that time gone? Obviously, everybody in the world suffered in some way. I think back to the West Brom promotion time, just gone. And then I just go all the way back to Southampton, the QPR the first time, the whole way. And then when I first signed my deal at Swindon all them years ago, I mean, I know people used to tell me football's a short career and you have to enjoy it and it goes so quick, but 33 now, it's mad.
I mean, just to go back to that original signing, it is true, isn't it? It's not an urban myth that you might have, could have gone to Bournemouth at the time, but just to show the contrast in what's happened over the last decade, they were on the bones of their backside in League Two at the time and couldn't raise the money to get the
It wasn't even raising money, Clem. I think whatever had gone on beforehand is, obviously they was going around the grounds, weren't they, raising money with the buckets and all that kind of stuff, but they had a transfer embargo because they mustn't have met regulations or something like that. I'm not too sure. But yeah, I was going to sign there. I was only at Poole Town at the time and they said no. And I was like, oh, I'm going to go on a week's trial at Swindon. And the rest was history.
Only at Poole Town. You were a bit of a trailblazer for a few others that have come through non-league since. Were you nervous as you stood in that tunnel waiting to go back out and meet the locals again?
Yes. I was okay all last week, mate, right? I was okay all last week. And then Saturday morning, I was fine. And then I just said to my wife, look, I'm off now. She drove the kids after. I sat in my car and I was like, right, showtime now. So the nerve started kicking in. I spoke to my mate and I was like, I'm nervous. Like, I'm excited, but I'm nervous because me coming back, I don't know, it almost just brings expectation, I think, of that to happen. And we had double figures in the ground, which was fantastic for the football club, and to put on a 5-star show like that was brilliant.
The feeling when the ball hit the back of the net,
relief, proud moment.
Is it relief?
Yeah, because the expectation. Listen, a lot of weight on my shoulders coming back, and not just on. It was a lot of weight on my shoulders coming back, but also I had the rest of the team that were brilliant, by the way, to a man, were fantastic, supporting me all the way through. And then when we crossed the white line as a team, we were fantastic. But to score, that was that moment of relief. Like, I was like, yeah, that kind of shut the doubters up. The people that didn't want me at the football club, or people that was questioning why I come to the football club. But most importantly, my wife and my kids were still in the stand. So it was a nice moment.
Mate, I have to ask you a question I've never asked a footballer before. what size shorts did you pick? Because I thought there was a bit of extra cloth willowing around the top of your legs there.
He messaged me, right?
One size too big.
Too big, mate. And it wasn't even on purpose. The kit man messaged Steve, good mate of mine, right? He messaged me Saturday morning and said, Chaz, what shorts do you wear? I said, just give me, just throw me a large one in there, right? So I thought, if I get medium, they'll be too tight. He gave me these large ones. I thought I was playing for LA Lakers when I put them on. They were massive, they were. Weren't they?
You could have put sailing masts in there and got halfway to the US with those in there.
I know, but Clem, do you know what the problem is? I can't change them for next week. I have to keep them on.
Oh, no, you're going to play the old lucky thing, aren't you?
Yeah.
Just before we wrap things up, let me just tell people your Skybet League 2 fixtures this coming weekend. These are all 3 o'clock on Saturday. Salford currently fifth. They go to Barrow. Bradford against Carlisle is seventh against fourth. There's a couple more big games at the bottom of the table. 19th place, Colchester entertain bottom club Gillingham. Gillingham, who scored more than one goal in a league game for the first time this season last weekend. The other big game at the bottom is Hartlepool in 23rd against Rochdale in 22nd. Third place, Northampton. 3 league defeats in 4. They're at home to Mansfield. The big game at the weekend, no disrespect, Chaz, is second against first. That is Stevenage against Leighton Orient. Both have lost just 3 times in the league this season. They're separated by 5 points. Stevenage have a game in hand, and Swindon travel to Walsall. You've signed to the end of the season, Charlie.
Yeah. Listen, it worked on both parts. It was to the end of the season. We'll see how we go. If we can build on what we've done at the weekend, then great. So I have a very good relationship with the chairman. But first and foremost, I'm here to play football. And if it don't work for both of us on the football pitch, then neither me or the football club are going to work. But at the moment, it was the 6 months. And then who knows what the future will hold. I'm just very grateful for him to give me the opportunity to, one, to come back to the football club, which I've been part of before. And two, to restart back in the UK. So... Listen, I owe him a lot, and it was 6 months now, and what will be the future will be.
I suspect there's a bit more mileage on the old clock yet. And as we talk to you, you're treating Mrs. A, the pair of you going off.
Yeah, mate. Listen, we've been back and forth, she has, in the last like 3 months. Australian, I was like, right. Then Christmas, a bit of whirlwind, as you can imagine. And then I was like, right, come on, I'll take you out for a nice spa day today, bit of lunch. Try and get the brownie points up, but I think I'm in the minus on the brownie points. That might just bring me back level, Clem, if I'm honest.
Oh, well, because of the Australia trip? Or
well, I did take her. I did take her to Australia, didn't I? Then said, come on, babe, we're going back. So, and bless her. I went in January. She came over in August. And when she came over, she boxed all the house up on her own, brought all the suitcases. And then when I looked her in the eye and said, we're going back. The words that come, listen, she was happy, but the words that followed out of her mouth was, beep, 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 you're going to help me pack the house this time.
Well, listen, lie her down quietly, put a couple of bits of cucumber over her eyes. Or whatever. Will you have, what kind of treatments will you have yourself? Are you going for your trotters done, or are you going for face?
Get my face done, body, but do you know what? I don't like people touching me trotters, mate.
Oh, okay. Well,
I know you've got to look after them. You've got to look after them, but I don't think I could put someone through it, Clem.
I'm sure your feet are in reasonable wrap. And in any case, the priority of your feet is their ability to wrap themselves around a football. Have a lovely day. Have a lovely rest of the season. I'm sorry it didn't quite work out in Australia.
Yeah, no worries,
but the
mate.
Bonus is you get to talk to us on the official EFL podcast. Thanks, Charlie. Lovely to see you.
Cheers, Clem. All the best, mate. Thank you.
That is it for this episode. A big, big thank you to Charlie Austin, to Liam Scully, our Sunderland supporter Lee Stewart, and to Johnny Howson. If you've enjoyed it, then please do give us a 5-star rating, press the subscribe button, and share on your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. My name's Mark Clement. Join us again soon for another episode of
The Official EFL Podcast.